Thanks, Steve. Wendy, I don't want to dwell on this.
Yes, you do.
But Mark Harmon just said, who's Ed Asner?
I honestly thought he was kidding.
He wasn't kidding.
I could see younger people not knowing him by name.
Mark Harmon's in his 60s.
See, Mark Harmon's 64 years old.
He should definitely know who Ed Asner is.
That one shocked me.
And he should worship at the altar of Ed Asner.
Yeah. But at least he was honest. I like when people are honest.
For those of you who missed the crosstalk, it went something along the lines of Mark Harmon saying, what do you guys have coming up on the show? You and I saying, Ed Asner. Mark Harmon saying, who's Ed Asner? You and I bursting into tears.
You did look like you were crying.
I was on the verge of tears.
I know you like Mark Harmon a lot, and you were very disappointed in him.
Very disappointed in Mark Harmon. I've said all along that here is the difference between the generation that's coming up right now. I'm not blaming this on millennials. Because
I
people
hate
blame
when,
everything on
millennials. I don't like that. I don't even have millennials, but you do, don't you?
I think I do. I don't know.
I don't know the age.
But the difference is that in generations past, we took a little pride in knowing what came before us, right? Like there's plenty of stuff that I wasn't around for. I wasn't around for the glory days of Gene Autry and Roy Rogers, but when I was a little kid, I knew who Gene Autry and Roy Rogers were.
You can't use yourself as a barometer,
You do not count.
Steve, are you with me here? Because there are some things that are thrown out there that even Bertrand and I are like, what?
Yeah, but I'll be your stand-in, Bill, because I think I did that, learned a lot about knew what came before and everything.
You did,
we
didn't
all
you?
Did.
Yeah. And, but here's why.
There was less on. There was less on TV. I mean,
we had to watch more conversations with people.
Yeah,
I don't know about that, but we had to watch. We had to watch the old stuff.
There was nothing else.
Would you just let me finish? There was nothing else. There was new stuff on at night and old stuff on all day.
Lawrence Welk. We all knew every character. Right. Lawrence Welk.
But I don't just mean from the world of TV. I mean from the world of literature. From the world of almost anything. You kind of just existing in the world, you just kind of picked stuff up and went, oh, that came 10 years before me, 25 years before me, 100 years before me. We just kind of absorbed it. But for some reason now, that's not a thing anymore.
Yeah, I just think there's so much now.
Yeah, there's just too much. There really is. I mean, come on. I think everybody out there from what age up would know William Shakespeare. There are a few that really stand the test of time, but then...
Right.
You know, there are other things that kids wouldn't know.
I guess, but isn't that kind of strange that there was just a cutoff? Like, at some point, people in the world just went, oh, that happened 20 years ago. I don't care about that. That doesn't matter to me anymore. And I'm not blaming Mark Harmon for that. You know what? Yes, I am. It's entirely his fault for that. But, all right, so Ed Asner... was at, I would say, at his most famous for doing the Mary Tyler Moore Show, for playing Lou Grant on both the Mary Tyler Moore Show and then on Lou Grant, right? So that's in the 70s into the early 80s, but the 70s for sure.
And they were two pretty different characters, but with the same name and similar jobs.
The whole gist of those shows was completely opposite. Mary Tyler Moore Show was a sitcom, and then Lou Grant was an hour-long drama. And you're right, Steve. I mean, you took a guy that was gruff but lovable and made him really, really gruff and fairly lovable. Not so lovable when he had his own show.
I got to be honest with you. I didn't watch much of Lou Grant.
I loved that show.
I did too.
Really?
It drove me here. I mean, I think.
Did it really?
Well,
yeah.
I mean, it was influential. Absolutely.
Is that why you sometimes call Wendy Mrs. Pinchon?
Pinchon, I do.
Yeah.
Which is better than Mrs. Soprano.
Way better.
Tony.
Way better.
I'd rather be Mrs. Soprano.
No, the Livy Soprano, the older of the Mrs. Soprano.
That's what I was, what's her name? Her actress?
Nancy Marchand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's who I was trying to do.
Oh.
My impressions are not very good.
So I don't mean to vent on Mark Harmon, but when somebody was around not that long ago, I mean, he has worked, Ed Asner has worked steadily for 50 years. Pinnacle, of course, Mary Tyler Moore Show and Lou Grant, but you would almost think somebody would know who he was.
I wonder. Now, he would know who Archie Bunker was. He would know Carol O'Connor, right?
Oh, I hope so.
Because Ed
you
Asner...
You don't think so, Steve?
I don't know. I mean...
I hope... Is he still here? I have to know. Here's why.
No, he walked out in a cloud of shame.
Because Ed Asner has also been in current things where you would,
right?
Oh my God, this is a great actor, and maybe your mind would say, "I'm going to look up what he's done in the past."
He was good just point. In. I just saw him in Dead to Me.
Yes,
yeah, that's where I saw him. It was driving me crazy.
And he was Abe.
And Grace and Frankie. He was in that.
Oh, was he in that also?
Yeah, a couple episodes.
So he's been steadily working. Carol O'Connor hasn't. I just wonder.
Died. Carol O'Connor died.
No, even afterwards, we didn't see him. Like, Lou Grant. Ed Asner has been in everything.
Yes.
He's what, like 89?
What did Carol O'Connor do after All in the Family?
He was on a show called In the Heat of the Night for several years.
Like I said, what did he
do?
No,
it was a pretty good show.
Real hot. He was very popular. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I take that back, but I got to know.
And he did bit parts in movies. Several movies. He was working pretty steadily too. But remember, you and I used to play a game when Kevin was our producer, called Kevin's Blast from the Past, where right. we would just mention celebrities from not that long ago, and then Kevin would just stare at us because he'd say, "Well, no one knows who that is, but yes, we did."
Well, the funny part of that, and we could play it along with Jasmine too.
I mean, I know nothing, but I did look up Ed. I do know him.
You do know
from
Ed
from Mary Tyler Moore, but I didn't know who he was.
Okay,
but see, that's what I mean. And when Kevin used to do this game, you would say, "Who is Georgia Engel?"
Yeah,
and Kevin would not just say, "I don't know." He'd make up some pretty funny
fake
answers.
His way through it.
It yes. was very funny.
Yes.
But we could play that with Jasmine as well because we're old.
Right.
Well, I think that's you could play the reverse of it too, where Jasmine could stump you on people who are popular now.
Every
modern
day.
Day people. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Every day it happens.
All right. But here's my thing. So when I go to my friends and I tell them, well, what I did at work today, they're like, "Who is that?" And I just have this whole briefing from you guys and everybody at WGN. They're like, "Okay, so why does that matter?"
Oh.
And they're just like, "Oh my gosh, I did not know that."
We're old. Plus, my favorite movie, one of the all-time favorites of mine, Elf. He plays Santa Claus.
Yes.
So, I mean, people should know that. Carmen should have known that.
Right.
I'm also going to bring this up to him, and I would imagine if 100 people stop at Asner during the course of a week, nobody brings this up, but I have to bring this up. Do you remember the first big TV miniseries was Rich Man, Poor Man?
Yes.
And he played the father of Rudy and Tom Jordache. He was Axel Jordache. A German immigrant who came over and was just always grimy and always mad at everybody. And he was so good. He was so scary when he played Axel Jordache. He made me tremble. I kept thinking, if that was my dad, I wouldn't survive a week. That's the meanest guy I've ever seen.
How old were you when you watched Rich Man, Poor Man?
10 or 11.
Okay, see.
Is that really when it, because I read the book then after it was on.
Yeah.
Oh, I watched that show.
That was so good.
I was in love with Nick Nolte, and look at him now.
Yeah.
What was
I'm in love with him now.
You are?
I'm kidding. He's more fun now.
What was the other guy? Was it Richard?
Richard Chamberlain?
No, Peter Strauss.
Peter Strauss.
Oh, yeah.
Peter Strauss, I loved him, too.
I think I watched it.
Oh, it was so good.
I was young. Just, I can't believe I was watching it.
There was just as naughty as it could be for network TV.
Yeah.
And that was like watching the Thornbirds. Remember that one?
Yes.
The
that was Richard Chamberlain.
Oh, there we go.
That was
okay,
Richard Chamberlain.
Thank you.
There was a
1976
scene.
It was on.
Yes. So I was 13 when it was on. I loved it. Every second of it.
It was a great show.
There was a scene where Nick Nolte's character, Tom Jordache, got a girl in trouble, as the people used to say. And he, Axel Jordache, was so, when he found out what happened, he was so furious, and he went after Nick Nolte, and he starts roughing him up, and he just stares at him, and he goes, in his German accent, "I hope she was worth it." And I
hope she was what?
I hope she was worth it. Meaning, I hope she was worth it.
Oh, worth it.
Yeah. But
I thought it was
I was watching at home, and
wait, I want to know what Wendy thought.
What did you think?
I thought you said averted.
I hope she was averted.
I hope she was averted.
I hope she was averted. He just stared at him, and I was
like
watching it
German.
Going, I would have, if I was Nick Nolte, I would have just melted. I would have just melted into a puddle, just the way he stared at him.
Listen, if you want a Rich Man, Poor Man, the complete collection, it is on Amazon for $230 in DVD form.
Worth every penny.
They don't have the Blu-ray.
Do you remember who the villain was? Who the bad guy was? A guy named Falcon Eddie, who I thought's name was Falcon, like the bird, and then Eddie, like your friend down the
Isn't
street.
Isn't it?
No, it's like an Italian last name, F-A-L-C-O-N-E-T-T-I,
okay,
Falcon
so
Eddie.
One more, Susan Sullivan?
Yes!
Who is just in stuff, and I, you know, she's familiar, but I just watched her in The Kominsky Method.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
Which is a great show on, I think, Netflix.
She's so good. I hope Mark Harmon's listening to this.
I do want to call him and see if he knows who Carol O'Connor is. Can we try and call him?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. I hope he's not listening, because I just quick question.
Post show meeting.
All right,
Chaz, you have a cell. Let's try and we'll take a break, and then I just don't tell him. Just say we have a question for him.
All right, that's fair. All right, well, that's coming up next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We are awaiting our guest Ed Asner, who we will speak to.
Who some of you love. Some of you aren't sure who he is.
Somebody said Mark Carmen should have known. We did try and reach out to him, and he is wisely not answering his phone.
Right. And I, first of all, I don't mean to vent on Mark. I love Mark. He's so much fun. He's such a good guy. But it's just, it was very disappointing. I think that's the best word to describe what just went on. It was very disappointing to hear Mark utter the words, "Who is Ed Asner?" I wasn't prepared for that today, Wendy. I'll be honest with you. I didn't think I would have to encounter that at any point today.
I just would have thought Mark Carmen, he's not old, but he's certainly not a millennial. He's young, but
he's old
he
enough
known.
To know and respect the magic that is Ed Asner. Or at least Jules Asner. Remember her?
Vaguely.
She would always do those Hollywood reports on what's going on in Hollywood.
Are you disappointed in me that I don't know? Steve Kometko. Yeah, all you got to do is say that.
They work together.
All right. Here is something else. My daughter's friend doesn't know who Robert Redford is and only knows Paul Newman as the salad dressing guy. Oh, we got Carmen. Mark Carmen did a fantastic job this morning filling in for Steve Cochran.
Ruined it in the crosstalk, let's be honest.
All right, Mark. Bill cannot put this behind him that you didn't know
upset.
Who Ed Asner was.
Uh-huh. So, guys, look, I want to apologize to Bill because I did see the hurt on his face, Wendy, and it was real. And I'll probably remember that specific look for as long as I live. So I do apologize, Bill.
Yep.
But we want to run a couple of other names past you, just for the heck of it. Do you know who Carol O'Connor is?
Carol O'Connor, from The Honeymooners?
Hang up, Wendy.
Are you being funny?
Before the world ends.
Are you being funny?
Carol O'Connor from, what was that show with Archie Bunker? Bunker Show?
Yeah, well, come on, give it to him. Bill's still looking disgusted.
I'll give it to you, but I'm not happy.
Bill, you had another one to bring up?
Mark, who is Bill Bixby?
Bill who?
Are you trying to be funny? Because you're not that funny.
No, I bet, Wendy, I know you appreciate honesty. Bill Bixby?
Bill Bixby. Who is Bill Bixby?
No idea.
Name a couple of the shows. If you lose what?
If I lose anything from this
you won't.
Experimentation by you, I'm going to be very irritated. But I do not know who Bill Bixby is.
Did you ever hear of the show? Where do you start? My Favorite Martian, The Courtship of Eddie's Father, Magician.
A little closer to
Goodnight
time.
Beantown,
like Incredible Hulk.
What is this, the 50s?
Incredible Hulk?
The Incredible Hulk, sure, loved it as a kid.
Mark,
Lou
Ferrigno's in town right now. He will find you, and he will hurt you.
Yeah, but see, what you're missing here, Bill, is that the names aren't necessarily important. It's the impact that the show had, right?
Yes.
I mean, I could tell you, like, give me a break,
yes.
Nell Carter, but I couldn't name you any of the other people on the show.
Right.
That doesn't mean that I didn't appreciate
it. You know,
right?
A Nell Carter and not an Ed Asner.
Right. I when I'm thinking TV history, I think of Give Me a Break and Mary Tyler Moore Show. Together.
Give me a break was a great show, Steve Bertrand.
Let me throw one at you, just because let's see. Lucille Ball.
Please know who this is. Please know who this is.
I know who Lucille Ball is from the Lucille Ball Show. However, I haven't watched the Lucille Ball Show maybe since I was three. I mean, I appreciate history. Like, great. My favorite movies are all the older movies, All the President's Men, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I could keep going and going. Marathon Man. Like,
yes.
I like Hoffman when he's younger.
Yes.
All right,
however,
Fred Gwynn.
Who? Fred Gwynn?
Fred Gwynn.
Fred Gwynn. Don't know.
Mm.
He should know this, shouldn't he?
You should know this, Mark.
I'm going to say he shouldn't know Fred Gwynne, though, because that was black and white. And
who was
Herman Munster.
We mentioned Lucille Ball. Name any of her husbands, Mark. Who was Lucille Ball married to?
Nope, not going to happen.
No? All right.
That's an F right there.
All right, it rhymes with Ricky Ricardo.
He's Desi Arnaz Jr.'s father. Does that help at all?
Bill, will you honestly? Well, the next time we play tennis, can we spend the first 20 minutes just working on this, and we can just do that?
I don't know if there's going to be a next time, Mark. I got to be honest with you.
I think the issue is Mark was a late reader because he just didn't read the credits.
Right? Maybe that's what it is. So maybe that's what it is.
Mayim Bialik.
A bagel and Bialy?
I thought this would be more up his alley.
Oh, no.
Ryan Billick, the NFL coach?
No.
What did you say?
Mayim Bialik. I might be saying it wrong.
No, you're saying it right.
She wore hats.
She's known for two television shows, two very important TV shows.
Saying it right or saying it wrong. Either way, I don't have it.
No.
Blossom.
Yeah.
And
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Ryan Seacrest.
Great man. Incredible entertainer.
I gotta go.
Is he on ESPN?
No. All right, Mark. We are not going to mention Ed Asner that you don't know who he is. That's not going to come up when we talk to him. And don't call in. Please do not call in.
I thought I just saw him in the green room.
No,
he's not. Is that not him, or was that Walter Jacobson?
Oh, my God. That might cost you the fill-in jobs on your own.
I love Walter.
You're still ahead? I'd say quit.
Quit now.
Jackie Gleason.
I love Jackie Gleason. Great energy.
What show?
No idea.
Put him back. The Jackie Gleason show. Put him back on primetime.
What popular sitcom? One of the first.
The Honeymooners.
All right. You redeemed. You sort of redeemed yourself. All right, Mark. Thank you very much.
Was this on the radio?
No.
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right.
Good day, sir.
It's Mark Carmen, who future generations will say, who? Who's Mark Carmen? Steve, thank you. Ed Asner will be on the show later.
You excited much?
I am a little excited. Yeah. All right. Yesterday, if you're a baseball fan, yesterday, no matter if you're a Southsider or a Northsider, was a fantastic day for baseball in Chicago.
Giolito.
Boy, was he good.
Mm-hmm.
He threw a shutout against the Minnesota Twins, who have one of the most potent offenses in all of baseball. And just, I have never seen a guy make a change in a season the way Lucas Giolito has. Last year, he was an okay pitcher.
Yeah.
He was. When he was throwing, you go, oh, anything can happen today. They could win by a lot. They could lose by a lot. I don't know what I'm getting. And this year, he is just amazing. This was his second complete game shutout. Complete games are almost a thing of the past in baseball. They used to be commonplace, but now a pitcher might go six or possibly seven innings, and then they're done. But he was just as strong in the ninth inning as he was in the first inning.
Do you not take him out because you want him to get that?
A lot of managers are of the belief that they don't want to burn a guy's arm out during the season, so they'll kind of pace it with him and let him go six or maybe seven innings if he's having a great day. But they were smart enough yesterday, Ricky Renteria, to go, no one can touch him.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw him as long as he can go.
Ricky Renteria is doing a great job.
He is. He really is. So that was good news. And then last night, I was fortunate enough. I've seen a lot of baseball games in my life. I was at Wrigley Field for the Cubs and Giants game, which was one of the most bizarre games I've ever seen. Whoever they let pitch at any point in the game couldn't get anybody out. It ended up 12-11.
Wow.
The lead changed hands, I think five times. But the Cubs fell behind early. They were down 2-0. They tied it. They took the lead. They lost the lead. They got the lead back. They lost it. They got it back.
It was like encouraging, discouraging.
Right.
Boy, that's a getting your money's worth kind of game.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There were two plays in particular. There was one where the ball got lost, in quotations, in the ivy, where everyone knew where the ball was.
I've never seen a ground rule double called that way. I think it was the right call, but it was in the vines, but you could see it clear as day.
Yes. Yes, but the outfielder was savvy enough to hold up his arms as though to say, I don't know where it is, which was a lie, because everyone knew where it was. But the rule is, if the ball gets stuck in the ivy and you can't find it, then it's a ground rule double. Which almost cost the Cubs a run. They still scored the run, so we were okay.
That's pretty weird.
But it was a lot of fun. And right up until the last, in the last inning, there was a play with Kyle Schwarber where it looked like he was safe. They called him out. I mean, there was a little bit of everything in the game. But the reason I bring it up is this. I don't know how to handle a situation like this. There was a man sitting next to me, a very nice man, who was a fan of the San Francisco Giants. So that meant, because he was a fan of the Giants, that when he was cheering for things, when he was standing up and cheering, I was not.
Right.
And when the Cubs were doing good things, the guys that I was with and I were standing up and cheering, and he was not. The difference is, he did this thing whenever the Giants did something good, and it was, there was a lot of that yesterday. They scored 11 runs. He would clap, but it was a clap that was exaggerated, where he would clap and move his hands wildly behind him in between claps. Now, I'm sitting down next to him, and his elbow was about an eighth of an inch from my eye every single time he did that, which was about 150 or 200 times during the game. So twice, I would hold my hand up because I didn't really want to get an elbow in the eye.
Right.
We experienced a lot during the game, but I thought an elbow in the eye was a little too much.
Not worth it.
Not worth it. So as he was doing that, and I'm kind of below him and behind him, he's standing up and he's in front of me and moving his hands, I just would like shield my eye from his elbow. And twice his elbow hit my hand and he would turn and he wouldn't apologize. He acknowledged it as if to say, okay, I guess that's as far as my elbow can go before I hit you in the eye. And I didn't want to start trouble with the guy. He was a nice guy and rooting for his team. You can't fault a guy for that.
He wasn't a nice guy because he wasn't. Listen, some of those seats are not that far apart.
They're very close together.
And you,
I was sitting closer to him, Wendy, than when my wife watches a game with me. We don't sit that close. That's how close this guy. Right. Right.
You have to be aware of your surroundings.
There's also, in a movie theater, or if you go to any venue where you're sitting next to strangers, you have to like an airplane would be a great example of this. You almost have to establish an invisible line where you go, let's try our best to not cross that line, because this is, even though this space is confined, that's all we have. I have this, you have this, let's keep it that way. But he was not a subscriber to that theory.
I know things get heated and exciting during a live sporting event. I get that.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you're sitting next to somebody who's a little more animated than you are. And you kind of, like, laugh it off. Like, the first time he hit your hand, if he had looked to you and just said something like, sorry, man, and you laughed and then kept it under control, there'd be no problem.
Agreed.
But how could you enjoy the rest of the game then?
I was scared for my eye the whole entire game.
See, I'm so passive-aggressive, I would have let him hit me, and then I would have gone, are you kidding me?
Right. Well, after it happened once, I said in my head, well, that'll probably not happen again, because once it's been established that your elbow's too close, that'll end it. But no, he continued to do it throughout the whole game. I just wanted to win the game to make him feel bad, I'll be honest with you.
But he wasn't, like, other than him invading your personal space and almost hitting you in the eye, he wasn't being, like, rude or
not in any way, shape, or form.
So then it's hard to get mad at the guy, too.
I wish he was a jerk all the time, so I could have said something. But no, for the and he was a very knowledgeable fan. He was there with a friend of his, also a Giants fan, and he kept sharing little tidbits of information that I went, wow, the guy really knows his stuff. An ardent fan of the Giants, I can't fault him for that. But whoever taught him to applaud during a baseball game did a horrible job, because he's going to take out an eye. He's going to put out an eye.
I told you when we went to see The Who, the whole family was there. So Jim and I and Michael and Dylan, and there was a guy in front of us. There were some empty seats, and he was dancing around and having a great time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when a new song would start, he would turn around, and I made the mistake of high-fiving him. Mm-hmm. So then it was like, oh, let's sing together. Let's. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, I got a joint. Do you want some? And he handed it to my son, Michael. And Michael looked at me like, I said, my kids are under 20. Turn around.
Right.
You know, no, we're not sharing.
Right.
But he was nice, but yet there comes a point where enough is enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, I see, that was my mistake for high-fiving him, because then he was my buddy the rest of the show. Jim was really mad at me. I know.
Because once you open that door, I can't help myself. Yeah.
I'm very friendly.
Yes.
Much to Jim's chagrin.
Yes. Yes.
Good job. Now we have a buddy here.
May I also ask this? Who started the tradition of when something happens in a game, you have to stand up for it? it's established that if we all sit down, we all have a fairly decent view of the game. And I know you get excited. I understand that. But I guarantee you, those same people, if they're watching at home, they don't stand up every time something good happens. I'm positive of that.
We stand up, like, watching Hawks games and stuff. We stand up.
But do you stand up because the people in front of you have stood up and you won't be able to see if you don't stand up?
Or no, but sometimes you can't contain your excitement.
If you're a stander, you have to be a quick sitter.
Yes.
I am.
But you've watched hundreds of games at home, Blackhawks games. Have you ever once stood up when something big happened?
That's what I'm saying. We do.
You do?
We all stand up and high-five each other and yell, goal! And then Kona the dog starts... Tiki the dog used to go crazy because we would start...
He was a huge Blackhawks fan.
Totally.
Yeah.
Jim's trying to get Kona to watch the games, and he
does. He likes the Maple Leafs, though. I don't know how that happens.
But we all stand up and high-five each other in our living room.
Really?
Yeah. It's, you know... Maybe not every goal, but when you know when it's a tight one and all of a sudden, or we've just taken the lead. Yeah, we totally
but when
do.
When you're at a venue and you know, like, I can't tell you how many times I've had a kid standing behind me or sitting behind me, and I say to myself, because everybody else has stood up, if I stand up, this kid's not going to be able to see anything.
Oh,
this is a
God,
little kid.
Don't, you can't worry about everybody else when you're feeling the excitement. And Steve's right. You shouldn't not be able to, like, stand up. I know you don't like. I know you will not high five any of your neighbors.
I don't like the high five.
I will high five anyone who will come by.
It's a community. Well, you just said you learned not to high five the pot smoker.
Well, that I.
Right.
At a sporting event, that's different.
But you got to. If you stand, you've got to sit.
I do
quickly.
Right away, you sit down right away.
As soon as it's over.
There's nothing worse than a lingering stander.
Right. Yeah, I don't do that.
Completely oblivious to people behind him.
I'm like, stand up, sit down, fight, fight, fight. That's what I do.
I went to the game yesterday with Harry Tynowitz, WGN's own Harry Tynowitz, and
Stop.
Then two other friends.
Did you get chocolate?
There was no chocolate, Wendy. So I say to Harry at the beginning of the game, you get one high five. You pick.
He means a lot to you.
I don't
you.
Do that for everybody, but for him, I say, because he high fives if the ball goes foul. Like if you go, oh, that's going to be a double. That's going to hurt us. No, it went foul. So he will extend the high five.
You won't even high five your, like, if I went to a game with you, you would not high. You would.
He'd
high,
leave you hanging.
I might right. give you one during the game,
but you'd
one.
Grimace. You'd hate it.
Yeah.
What would happen at the second one? You just let me hang?
I would say you already used it in the seventh inning. You can't use a second high five.
Well, I would have high fived you before the seventh inning.
No, you get one.
I love to high five.
Wow.
I'm going to open up a high five booth.
It's like a hug booth.
Like a kissing booth. But
so during the game, people could come to your booth and you would high five them?
Damn
would that,
straight,
would
I won't even charge them. Nope, not going to.
Free?
Yep.
You're going to lose your shirt.
Free high fives.
You're going to go broke. All right.
I'm going to lose my shirt at a game. Yeah. Do you forget I'm a girl sometimes?
I'm going to write. Hold on, I'm going to write it down.
So it could increase forget. Traffic, though, at the high five booth.
Right. All right, we'll take a break, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy at WGN. A lot of texters, Wendy, want to know when exactly you'll be opening up your high five booth. And you'll do it both at Guaranteed Rate Field and at Wrigley, or just Guaranteed Rate?
I'm not going
Rate?
To Wrigley.
You refuse
Why would
to?
I go to Wrigley?
All right.
Paul wants to talk to us about some behavior at a game. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
We're good. High five me. Sorry, Johnny.
That's okay. That's okay. But I just wanted to tell Bill and you, I think I'm becoming, I graduated from an apprentice curmudgeon to a full, card curmudgeon. Because when I go to concerts and I spend $350, $400 for a ticket, and people stand up through the whole concert in front of me, I tap on the shoulder and say, please sit your, down.
Yes.
I mean, other people want to see.
Yes. I don't get it.
Steve is right. Steve is right. If you're going to be a stander, then just sit down right away. I mean, but you can't stand there through the whole concert like some of these people do. I mean, I guess maybe it's the curmudgeon-y effect in me, but I don't know. But I just think that's... you spend all of that money, and none of these tickets are cheap anymore.
Oh, my God, I know that.
And you can't see it,
Paul, they design these venues so that every seat in the house has as good of a view as they can possibly imagine. And then, you go to a game or you go to a concert, and all you have to do is stand up, sit down, stand up, sit down. If I wanted that, I'd go to church.
Paul, let me ask you a question. All right, so I had some friends that went to see Elvis Costello last time. He was, I think, at the Chicago Theater, and they were standing up during Allison, great song, and there were people behind them that tapped him and said, excuse me, could you sit down? I don't even know if it was Allison, but it was a hit of his. Can't you stand up during, like, you know, one of their major hits?
Yes, I guess you can. You're there to have fun. Everybody pays their money to go there, and I just think that people need to be, like you said, about the guy that was, sitting next to Bill at the Cubs game. You know, you got to be cognizant of who's around you and what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, I just went to see Barbra Streisand. We went there. And
no one stood up for that.
There were a couple of ladies in front of us that were, for lack of a better word, large ladies. And they stood up. And I just sat there. I said, excuse me, ladies, could you sit down? And they did apologize, but they were rocking in the seats. Yep. You know, standing up there.
Yep.
Well, they paid their money too, Pat.
Yep, exactly.
Or Paul,
anyway,
I'm sorry.
I love you guys. Take care.
Thanks, Paul.
You so much.
Did you ever go to, I'm sure at some point when you were a kid, you went to a concert or a game of some sort, a baseball game, a hockey game, a football game. Didn't it drive you crazy when you were half the height you are now that people kept standing up? Because the second people stood up in front of you, the game's over for you. You can't see anything.
Yeah, but that's part of life. You kind of move around and try and find your view. It's never fails whenever I'm at a concert or game.
Yeah.
There'll be like a really tall guy and either a friend or a partner that's with him.
Yeah.
And I am always behind the tall guy.
Yeah.
Trust me, as a tall guy,
yes,
people think they're not being rude. Like, you know, they can... If I sit down in a movie theater and I happen to choose a seat in front, now they're all cushy seats, but you sit down in front of someone, there are people behind me who are just like, oh my God.
Yeah, you know? Just ruined my whole experience.
Don't you try and scatter? Like,
I do,
yeah.
Sure, but you can't always do it. But it's like, you know, hey, it's who I am.
Cut your head off.
Right. Well, that would solve it.
But
right.
That's what I mean. There are tall people, there are short people, and there are little kids. You kind of maneuver yourself so you can see.
I couldn't see. Every game I went to as a kid, it seemed like I was sitting behind Manute Bol.
Is that where this comes from, Bill?
Yes.
Your aversion to...
Well, no, because I'm so cognizant of who's... Like, if there's a kid sitting behind me, I don't stand up because I want that kid to experience the game.
He's
not
your kid. He can figure... You know what? His dad can put him on his shoulders. You don't carry...
But then the people behind them can't see.
We're all in this together.
I just say, and I'm going to start a thing now when I go to games. I'm going to make an announcement for the game. We're all going to enjoy the game, but we're all going to enjoy it sitting down so that everyone can see.
30 seconds before you get punched.
Oh, they'll kill me. They'll tear me to shreds. There's no doubt.
Anybody out there like beer? Because I sure like beer. Do you like beer?
Yeah, beer's nice.
Yeah. My old alma mater, Brookfield Zoo, I worked there for many, many years. We have a pair of tickets to Brookfield Zoo's annual Zoo Brew. It is this awesome, fun-filled beer tasting festival. It's happening this weekend, specifically Saturday night. You can sample more than 80 ales, lagers, stouts, porters, and malts, plus jam out to some live music from the band Hello Weekend. This is totally fun. Tickets are limited. You can get yours at czs.org/zoobrew. That's chicagozoologicalsociety.org. So czs.org/zoobrew. Or we have a pair of tickets to give away right now. This is a over $100 value. You'll get to drink some beer, enjoy some live music, and it's all happening in the beautiful confines of Brookfield Zoo. What number caller should we do?
Caller 6, Wendy, right now. Caller 6 at 312-981-7200 wins what Wendy just said.
Look, miss, would you try answering the questions as I ask them?
Yes, Mr. Grant, I will, but it does seem that you've been asking a lot of very personal questions that don't have a thing to do with my qualifications for this job.
You know what? You got spunk.
Well,
I hate spunk. Tell you what, I'll try you out for a couple of weeks, see if it works out.
Oh.
If I don't like you, I'll fire you.
Right, right.
You don't like me, I'll fire you.
Ed Asner has been entertaining us for 60 years on the stage, on television, and on film. And I'll tell you one thing about Ed Asner. He does not like spunk. Be spunkless, Wendy.
I can't be. Hi, Ed. How are you?
I love it. It's a lie. It's a lie. I retract all those former stipulations.
You're now a spunk fan, are you? Good for you. Ed, I'm going to start out this, and I know this is very unprofessional, but I'm going to do it anyway. We love you, sir. There's no doubt about it. We love you.
Well, I love Chicago and anybody in it.
All right. That's
my town.
And we are glad you're coming. You're coming to town. You will be out in Naperville and also in Munster, Indiana. We'll give all those details coming up. A one-man show, A Man and His Prostate. This is kind of an autobiography, right?
No, it's not.
No.
How dare you think that I have a deficient prostate? I'll show you.
You know, up until about 20 years ago, I thought women had prostates, too. I am very unaware of things.
Well, they have found a very few women, but a few cases, I'm told, that they have found shards of prostates in them.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I bet I have some.
I thought I dropped that bomb, but it's very few women, I must tell you. It's a freakish occurrence.
Yes.
Wow. Didn't know that.
Ed, what was the reason you came up with this idea for a show? What was going on in your life that you thought, I got to do a one-man show about myself and my prostate?
Well, it's not about me. It's about Ed Weinberger.
Oh.
This is his story.
Yeah.
He was a producer on Mary Tyler Moore, producer, writer. And he wrote this brilliant comedy about what happened to him.
And there it is.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about that? And do you enjoy that, just being on stage? I mean, 60 years in show business says a lot about you, sir. That's some incredible staying power right there.
Well, without show business, I'd be nothing.
Is that true? Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I guess
yeah.
So.
It made me. Let's say it made me a person.
Can we talk about the magic that was the Mary Tyler Moore Show? Do you think about it every day, about what that situation was like to be a part of one of the greatest TV shows of all time?
It felt great while we were doing it. Whether we knew that it was going to be great, we left it up to chance. I'm delighted that it became so memorable and that it made us. Let's face it, it made us.
What do you think about it? Ed, when you see it now, when you come across an episode now, what are your thoughts when you watch it now?
It lives. It's correct. It doesn't seem phony. It's not phony.
Yeah,
I know
you. We loved each other. We got angry at each other, and we were surrounded by great writers.
And I know you've heard this 100 times, but it was so instrumental in women achieving power, being single, and getting a career and moving forward. It meant a lot to a lot of us.
But, you know, you say that, and I must say at the time, I had no idea that this being a pioneering effort. I'm amazed that women were that oppressed at the time that they regarded this as a freedom maker.
Ed, was there one particular episode that you think stands out? I mean, there were so many great episodes of the Mary Tyler Moore Show over the years, but is there one personally for you that's a favorite?
Well, the pilot. The pilot is always the favorite, in this case anyway, because we didn't know what we were doing. We loved what we were doing. We loved each other, but we had no idea how magical it was. And When that office hiring scene that you played a part of before I came on, when we were doing it, and I delivered the I hate spunk line.
Yes.
The laughter that came out erupted out of the audience of 300 people was so enormous, I felt I could command them to jump off a cliff and they'd follow my orders. And it just, the strength I felt just from that moment, that I guess it assured me that no matter what happened, we were onto something big.
Do you remember an episode? I'm sure you do.
You're asking Ed.
Yeah,
I gotta hear this.
You remember this. All right. So late in the show's run, Lou Grant gets divorced from his wife, and he and Mary decide we should go out on a date.
Yeah, that was great.
And then there's that awkward kiss toward the end of the day. You both kiss each other, and you just start laughing, and it was just magic.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't work, did it?
Just beautiful.
She went her way, and I went mine, and I so wanted her.
I don't remember another instance, Ed, where you took a character like Lou Grant that was on a sitcom, and then you did a total 180, and Lou Grant, the show Lou Grant, became a drama. Can you think of another actor who played the same character both as a sitcom and as a drama, as an element? I don't remember.
No, I can't, and I must say that we broke ground with doing that. I so trusted my two main producer writers, Alan Burns and Jim Brooks, that when CBS said that they would like me to do a show for them, and the boys, and I said, fine, I'd like these two guys to be the producers. And they went off and thought about it and came back and said that they wanted to do Keep Lou, but not make it a comedy.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, it was like, wherever the 600 went, I would go with them.
Yeah.
Into the Valley of Death rode the 600, as they said.
Mm-hmm.
And I was willing to take those chances. And they had Leon Takotian write the initial pilot. And he was brilliant. He was a brilliant writer. Showed me coming back to Minneapolis. No, L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And looking bedraggled and worn out and downtrodden, and getting the job with Charlie Hume and Mrs. Pinchon.
Yep. What a great show.
It was lovely. It was lovely. Now, the other interesting thing I'll share with you, which I've shared with others, is that when the show opened, I was in therapy at the time. I wasn't crazy about it, but I was trying it out. And I went in for a session with my doctor, and I'm lying on the couch. He was a Freudian. I'm lying on the couch, and one of the questions that comes out of him is, why do you grimace so much?
Hmm.
And the realization started. Lou Grant was done as a single camera show.
Mm-hmm.
No audience, and no laughs, because it was not thought to be a comedy.
Yeah.
But there were laughs within it. So I said, well, I want people at home to know when to laugh. So I'll grimace every time I do something that could make it. And I felt like such a jerk. Here I was, grimace. You'll have to watch the first shows to see me grimacing now. Oh, you promise me you'll do that.
Yes, we will, definitely. You were in one of my favorite movies in Elf. I totally love you, and that is Santa. Netflix had Dead to Me. It was a pleasure to see you turn up on that as such a wonderful old father figure friend to Linda Cardellini. Just some great work from you. You're amazing.
Thank you. Thank you, dear. Thank you very much.
And
it's all been a great pleasure.
The one-man show, A Man and His Prostate, written by Emmy Award winner Ed Weinberger, who was a writer and producer on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And this is based on Ed's real-life medical emergency, and you will be delivering it in Naperville on Saturday night and Sunday night, Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana. For tickets, the best place to send people is...
Theateratthecenter.com.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yep. Ed, so many texts from people with high praise for you, but text after text after text is saying, please tell Ed how much we loved his work in the movie Up. Boy, aww, were you great in that. And if anyone can get through those first 10 minutes of that movie without crying, good luck to you. I don't know how you do it.
Was that a piece of work?
Yes.
Pete Doctor was the main creator of that. And the man has a magic touch.
So moving. Just so moving. And, Ed, I have to say, I already told Wendy I was going to bring this up to you. When I was a kid, your work in Rich Man, Poor Man as Axel Jordache terrified me to no end. You were just so intimidating. So great.
Thank you, man. It is one of my favorite pieces of work. And I will always stand up and say it's perfect.
Yep.
Susan Blakely was wonderful in it. Nick Nolte was wonderful in it. Peter Strauss. Everybody that touched it. Dorothy McGuire. I loved. And that's a funny story, too, because I didn't think I was right for it. I thought somebody like Philip Dorn would be a correct Axel Jordache.
Yeah.
But the producer, God love him, I can't remember, Harve Bennett, wanted me. So, okay, so I'll do it. I read the book, and I came in and did it. And he had a limp, so I thought, well, I'll tell the people at Universal to give me some kind of prosthetic that would make me limp.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, so I limped on my own without any prosthetic.
Mm.
And I tried the accent, and David Green said, the director said, well, I don't know, do you want to use the accent? You don't have to. And I thought, good God, what would he be without an accent?
Right.
So I used the accent. And that was correct.
Oh, were you good?
And we marched into that unknowing area, and everybody did their best work, I think.
It was.
I'm proud of it.
Speaking of being proud in your many pieces of work, you will be honored in a couple of weeks at the Burbank International Film Festival. You are going to get the Lifetime Achievement Award, and you're going to turn 90 in November, so we wish you all the best.
You are a sweetheart.
It's such a pleasure
Thank
to
you.
Talk to you. We are big fans.
Thank you.
And again, you can see the one-man show, A Man and His Prostate, Center Stage Theater in Naperville and Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana, 24th and the 25th. Thank you so much for talking to us.
You're in the will.
Oh, awesome. It worked, Bill.
Our plan has worked. Ed, we love you. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Take care of my town.
We promise.
We will.
The great Ed Asner, everybody. We're in his will. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, that was Ed Asner.
That was a pleasure.
That was Ed Asner. I didn't bring this up to him, but years ago I was working in another station, and I had this idea, this stupid idea, where we would call Ed Asner every day during the month of December for a segment that I called Ed Asner's Advent Calendar. And every day he would open up a door on an advent calendar and announce what it is. And it was stupid, and I never thought he would do it, but he agreed to it. So
he did? That amazing?
We taped them all in one day. It was the week before Thanksgiving, and I explained the concept to him, and he thought it was very funny. And he goes, you got to write it for me, because I don't know what's in an advent calendar. So I said, don't worry, we'll write it. I wrote it, and we faxed it over to him. It was the days of fax machines. So we then played it every day during December. We'd be doing something on the show, and then the phone would ring, and I'd pick it up, and I'd go, yeah, sure, Ed Asner, we'll put you on the line. And he'd go, hey, it's time for Ed Asner's Advent Calendar. Let's see what's behind door number 6. And he'd go, it's a candy cane. I hope you're happy. And then just hang up the phone.
Oh, my God, that is so funny.
It was amazing because I felt so much pride that Ed Asner was saying words that I wrote.
Why didn't you bring this up to him?
Because it was 15 years ago. There's no way in the world he'd remember it.
Yes, he has. I guarantee no one else has asked him to do it.
I know.
And knowing
that for
you for all these years, I know how disappointing the advent calendar was for you.
Well, that was the gist of it, was that every day he got more testy over the fact that it was a drum or a bell or a candy cane, and he would just get more surly as it went on.
He would have remembered that. No one else, no radio DJ.
During the practice of it, we're on the phone, so he's in Los Angeles and I'm here in Chicago. So he would go, it's a tin star. And then he would just be quiet and he'd go, was that too sweet? And I go, no, that was great, Mr. Asner. You did it just perfectly. That wasn't too sweet, believe me. I love him.
He still has it, too.
Oh, yeah. He's 89 years old. He sounds so great.
Well, go see him. It's a man and his prostate. No, it isn't prostrate, and I know a lot of people say that word wrong. Center Stage Theater on August 24th, that's in Naperville, and then the next day at the Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana. That's this weekend, oh my God.
Yeah.
Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. Yep, coming soon. All right, we will take a break. Dean Richards will join us in just a little bit. We'll talk about what new movies are coming out, so stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry? If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. We will not talk about hard boys.
He's Dean wearing an R2-D2 shirt.
I've heard that. Dean, you're wearing an R2-D2 shirt?
I am in my full nerd chic wear today.
You're at Comic-Con in Rosemont, correct?
I was.
Not anymore.
I'm back at good old 2501 West Bradley Place today because I was at Wizard World Comic-Con that kicks off today at 4 o'clock and goes all weekend long. And I was driving back from Wizard World in my car and nearly got into an accident.
Oh, no. What happened?
Why?
When I heard Mark Carman.
Yes.
Oh, I know.
Yes.
Say that he did not know who Ed Asner is.
Wasn't that disheartening?
Yeah.
Yes.
And then your follow-up investigation.
Is that what you call it?
Counselor. when you got him back on the phone and asked him about Carol O'Connor and, you know, some of the rest.
Yep.
I didn't almost lose control of my car. Then I just wanted to smash it into the side of an embankment.
I know. He really shouldn't have answered our call. It was better before we talked to him again.
Right? Who takes a follow-up phone call? What does he think's going to happen when somebody says, Bill and Wendy want to talk to you on the air? That can only mean one thing.
Now, to be fair, we asked Ed Asner off the air if
he
knew
who Mark
Carman. No idea. Zero.
Well, turnabout's fair play.
Right. Yeah.
Here's the thing, though, and why this resonated with me so much. This has been my pet peeve for the last couple of months. Exactly the words Bill was saying, that people seem to not have a sense of things that have happened.
Right.
Already. You don't have to live through them to know about them. I didn't live through Benny Goodman, but I know who he is.
Yes.
I know what he did. I know who Al Jolson was. I know who, you know, people who were way before I was even born.
Right.
You know about those things.
Why did people stop caring about what happened?
Well, you guys are in the media. That's a little different. You have to have some background of all things.
but even things that aren't media related, it's just history.
Yeah, I don't want to be rude to any groups of people, millennials.
Right.
But
they get it all the time.
Well, you know, maybe they deserve it all the time then.
Well, I have a Gen Xer. Is that the one after it or Gen Y? What's after millennial?
Gen Weigel, I think. I think.
He's 20. My son Michael knows all this stuff, but he's into that.
Yeah, he kind of grew up with you.
Yeah, I guess. Like, because your kids know. Well, no.
They know. Every once in a while, they'll ask who somebody is, and I'll be embarrassed and shocked. Dad, Tony Randall. They'll just shrug, and I'll go, really? You don't know Tony Randall? Yeah. It's very upsetting.
At least Bill and I don't know if I want to throw Wendy into this, but we could not sound like two more, like, we're the two old guys sitting in the balcony on the Muppet
Show.
Yeah,
what are their names?
Statler and Waldorf.
Hey, you kids, hey, you don't know who these is, are you whippersnappers? But there does seem to be, I don't understand. Here, I talked to a millennial this week.
Yeah.
I won't bust her on the air, but she's somebody who is on Chicago television.
Oh, all right.
Who did not know who Brad Pitt is.
Oh. Okay, that's unacceptable.
Doesn't know Brad Pitt, doesn't know Keanu Reeves.
Oh, that hurts my heart.
I did stories about them, and then it was like, who are they?
You have to go out of your way to not know who those guys are.
I do not know who they are. You're not paying attention. Or maybe there's something else. I forget if it was Wendy or Steve Bertrand who said that they're, you know, we didn't have any other choices
but to watch television
then. You know, there are a lot of other options now to distract yourself. But how do you not know Brad Pitt and Keanu Reeves?
They're current. They're now.
And they're gorgeous.
And they're
hello.
And they're gorgeous. Hello. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so upsetting.
And they're gorgeous. Hello. That was good, Bill.
That's very, very upsetting. Speaking of upsetting, I heard you were very surprised this morning, Dean, to find out that Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, as the kids call him, The Rock, is the number one paid actor right now, but also of all time.
Well, for the past year. I don't know if he's the highest paid of all time.
I think this is the third year in a row that he's topped the earnings list. And just because prices are what they are, not only is it now, but it's forever. No actor has ever earned more than Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
He earned nearly $90 million from June of 2018 to June of 2019. Hobbs and Shaw, Jumanji, the HBO series Ballers, and I'm probably forgetting, you know, being uninformed as I am about pop culture, probably I'm forgetting some of the other ones. But he's got all kinds of endorsement lines, clothing and headphones and all kinds of other things. So he made a boatload of money. What really surprised me was that two of the Avengers, who are also in the top five, that he beat two of the Avengers.
Wow.
Liam Hemsworth came in number two.
Thor.
Robert Downey Jr.
Iron Man
came in number three on the list. There was a Bollywood actor whose name, let me just pull it up here real quick because I want to acknowledge him.
Yeah.
Bollywood actor who Mark Harmon also does not know.
No, what if Mark
I
knew
bet he does.
Mark knew every one of his films.
Akshay Kumar is his name. He's a big deal in the Bollywood film industry. Number four, $65 million. And good old Jackie Chan.
Yep, still
rounding
hanging
out
on
the top five. He made $58 million last year.
Pretty good. I remember a couple years ago when it first came out that Dwayne The Rock Johnson was number one. It was the same week that Daniel Day-Lewis announced he wasn't going to make any more movies. And I was sure there was some connection. Because as soon as Daniel Day-Lewis, who's one of the greatest actors ever found
time.
That out, he just went, whoa.
I'm getting out of show business.
Why am I in this?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a Walmart greeter now. I don't know if a lot of people know that in Niles. If you go to the Niles.
Cool.
Yeah, Abraham, you walk in, you think Abraham Lincoln's working there, but it's really Daniel Day-Lewis.
Now, with two of those top five, Dean, the actor from Bollywood, Akshay Kumar.
Yes.
His movies don't do exceptionally well in the United States, but in other parts of the world, if he's in a movie, people rush to, they can't wait to see it.
Right.
And Jackie Chan is like that in the East.
Yeah. That gives you an idea of, you know, how big other foreign movie markets are.
Yeah.
You know, we think that we're the end-all, be-all in North America.
Right.
And in the United States, but it's a big world out there, and it turns out that the Bollywood film industry is enormous.
Yes.
And so is the Asian film market. Same thing.
No question. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then Dean will tell us what movies are coming out this weekend. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dean Richards is our guest. Dean is telling us about what new movies are coming out this weekend. Dean, let's start with Ready or Not. What is that?
It's a horror movie, a bloody horror movie that normally is definitely not my cup of tea, my genre of movies. But I wound up loving this movie. I don't like horror movies usually, not because of the blood and guts necessarily, but because of the predictability of them, how they're so cookie cutter, and there's so little that's original in these movies. This movie, Ready or Not, is more than violent, more than bloody, more than disturbing in many ways. But it's, I got to say, complete original. It's the story about meeting your in-laws. You know, everyone may have, you know, had different experiences of how anxiety-filled it can be to meet your in-laws. In this movie, it's a blue-collar girl who marries a guy from a rich family. She grew up in foster care. He grew up in a, you know, big family loaded with money. But along with all of their money and their huge mansions come some eccentricities and more than a love of the macabre, including a very odd ritual that this family has, kind of an initiation that is a sort of a life-or-death hide-and-seek initiation in which the new person who's about to enter the family is hunted down in the giant lockdown mansion by all of the other family members. And if they survive, then they get to stay in the family.
Oh.
If not, well, then they're dead.
Oh.
So this movie is about this cat and mouse game. And it's a very interesting concept, I think. But also, it's exciting, and it's, you know, it's got all the things that you want, horror film fans want in a horror movie. But it's written so cleverly and so funny. I was sitting laughing out loud at some of the things that they were doing in this movie that, you know, were intentional. The performances are intentionally a little over the top. The writing is definitely over the top, and like sort of with a wink of an eye to the audience that, you know, they even get that it's kind of goofy. And I wound up absolutely loving this movie, and I gave it a Dean's List B+.
Excellent. Ready or Not gets a B+ from Dean. The Peanut Butter Falcon.
Oh, this is my favorite movie of the week. This one is a story about a young man who is living with Down syndrome. The actor who plays this character is a first-time actor who, in real life, lives with Down syndrome. He was discovered at a camp. He had an interest in acting. He had an interest in theater, and he was discovered by the directors of this movie, and they put him in this movie with Shia LaBeouf and Dakota Johnson. It's a story about this this young man who is living in a nursing home. He hates living in the nursing home because, like a lot of people who are in nursing homes, but especially people with mental challenges, they're talked down to. They're minimalized. They are trivialized. They're not really treated like human beings. They're treated like, you know, just somebody on a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
So this kid wants to get out of there. He loves wrestling. All he does is watch TV wrestling. And he wants to escape from this nursing home and live his own life. And he wants to meet his TV wrestling hero. So he does figure out a way how to break out of the nursing home. And now he's out on the roads by himself, where he meets up with this sort of free spirit who is also on the lam from a lot of different people. And they both just sort of hitchhike and travel the roads together to try to get to the TV wrestling hero, to both try to get to their destinations. But along the way, they develop this beautiful friendship in which you see, Shia LaBeouf is the free spirit guy, where you see the young man whose name is Zach Gottsagen, that's the name of the real-life actor, where Zach is treated with respect and dignity, and he is treated with a care, and he is given the attitude by this guy that he barely knows that you can do anything. And it's heartwarming and beautiful and touching. Dakota Johnson is one of the caretakers from the nursing home that, after he escapes, tries to find him to bring him back into, you know, this institutionalized world.
Mm-hmm.
But when she does find him out on the road, realizes, you know, what's really meaningful to this young man and what she is supposed to be taking him back to. It is just one of the most beautiful, touching movies out this year. I can't recommend it enough. Dakota Johnson, Shia LaBeouf, Bruce Dern has a small role in the movie. Thomas Hayden Church has a small role in the movie. And this young man, Zach Gottsagen, is a movie that you must see. Dean's List A
for
the Peanut Butter Falcon.
Very good. Sounds great.
Dean, one more quick one. Angel Has Fallen.
Yeah, real quick, a little bit disappointed. It's it's an action thriller. Gerard Butler had these series of movies, Olympus Has Fallen, London Has Fallen, and now Angel Has Fallen. He's an elite Secret Service agent who's accused of trying to kill the president. He's thrown in jail. He escapes to try to find the real person who's trying to assassinate the president. Nothing but cliches. It's a very average movie. I gave it a Dean's List C+.
Very good. And Dean, before we let you go, I'm looking at this list of the top earners in movies. The Rock is number one. You got a couple of Avengers, number two and three. I'm shocked at number six, Beanie Feldstein. How did that happen?
I love her.
Really?
Number six.
Beanie Feldstein deserves to make more money.
I think she does, too.
Just for having that name all of her life. She ought to be compensated some way.
I hope she marries a man named Cecil. That is my only hope. We'll see what happens.
I would love to see that on Wedding Matches. Beanie and Cecil,
yep,
who Mark Hartman also doesn't know.
No,
there probably are a lot of people listening right now that don't know that. I know who it is, but come on, guys. It's 2019, is it
right?
Not?
The Bill Left's Obscurity Theater every week at this
join
time.
Join us. Please join us. Dean, thank you so
thank
much.
You,
have a great weekend.
Bye, guys.
That's Dean Richards. That's who that is. We'll say goodbye in a little bit. We're headed to the stream. We'd love for you to come with us, but Steve's got the Wintrust Business Lunch.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Jen DeSalvo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All happening right here at WGN.